Great. Thank you so much, Bill. So we have one more speaker who's present in the room, and then we will have a recorded message from Bob Hauser, the executive director of DBAS, which is the division of the Academy that sponsors our board. I'd like to welcome Bob Simon, who is the staff director of the Senate Committee on Energy and Natural Resources, and also, it turns out, unbeknownst to me, a former board director here at the Academy. So I'll have to learn at some point how you managed that. But Bob is currently, of course, working a lot on issues related to the energy transition and energy policy. So Bob, please.
Well, it's actually a great honor to be here on several accounts. It's flattering to be thought of in the same vein as Ralph Cicerone and Bill Riley. I won't be very long because when I first got up to the Hill, one of the early policy areas I got into was risk assessment. And I learned that there are two places in Washington that are really the riskiest places. One would be the space between certain politicians and a TV camera. And the second one is between a reception and the second drink at the bar. So I'll try to be succinct. I've had the great privilege of working for a terrific member, Jeff Bingaman, senator from New Mexico, for the better part of the last 14 years. And for the last 10 years or so, 12 years or so, I've worked with him as his staff director at the Committee on Energy and Natural Resources. And we've worked over that time on a number of energy bills, trying to get our arms around some of the critical sort of energy policy issues. And I think that what we've learned and what we've developed is sort of a comprehensive way of thinking our way through the problem that's sort of premised on basically four key questions. The first question is, what about supplies? Because you obviously need adequate and affordable supplies of energy. What about efficiency? Because obviously, to the extent that you've got energy, if you use it as efficiently as possible, that's a great help. What about markets? Since the 70s, we have relied on markets to help set the price of energy and allocate energy supplies. And finally, what about the balance between energy and the environment? And those have been kind of the four questions that have underlain a lot of the energy policy debates that we've had, a lot of the energy legislation that we've passed, and some that we haven't passed. I wish we had passed. But as I sort of think about this new board and I think about those four questions, I think that those questions provide a rich source of problems for this new board to consider because each of them depend critically on having a more sophisticated understanding of sort of the human dimensions of energy and of climate. I think you just look at the papers and what do you see? If we're looking at sort of our supply issues today, well, one of the key problems we have on energy supplies is getting people to accept hydraulic fracturing in their backyard. Okay, these are technologies and sort of industrial operations that are coming to the backwoods of Pennsylvania for the first time in 80 or 100 years. And there is a real social issue in terms of communicating to people, what are these technologies? Why are all these trucks on the road? Why am I hearing compressors at night? I mean, there are a lot of sort of public participation and acceptance issues that, when they aren't addressed, result in real breakdowns in our ability to develop energy supplies in an effective way. When it comes to energy efficiency, we can certainly see that there are lots of both problems and opportunities in trying to harness human behavior to become more efficient human behaviors. About 6 months ago, Senator Bingaman and I were out in Stanford visiting Jim Sweeney and others at Stanford, and one of the most interesting places we saw, sadly, wasn't at Stanford itself, but it was a startup called Nest Labs located in Palo Alto. And what Nest Labs has done is they have hired about 100 software and hardware engineers from the high-tech sector to redesign the thermostat. Programmable thermostats have been around for 20 or 30 or maybe even longer. Some percentage of the population buys them. I'm one of them. A vastly small percentage of that percentage actually programs them, and it's a classic problem in sort of human factors. And what Nest has done is they have hired people with all sorts of behavioral and social science expertise. They have a tremendous number of people who are expert in artificial intelligence and machine learning to redesign a thermostat so that it is something that is intuitive to use. Because it's a huge opportunity to save energy. And so it shows in a very neat package, both the problems of energy efficiency that the human element is connected to, as well as the opportunity for making rather substantial progress. In terms of figuring out how to organize markets, well, markets are nothing but collective decisions of lots of people, and energy markets, particularly electricity markets in this country, are horrendously fragmented in regional, along regional lines, along institutional lines. We have all different kinds of entities trying to generate and sell electricity to people. Those different entities have very different kinds of people to whom they serve, between a rural electric co-op, somewhere out in Lee County, New Mexico, versus Commonwealth Edison in Chicago. So you have a whole range of issues in trying to understand how those markets actually operate. How do the human factors actually come together in some sort of aggregate form, and how are decisions made? What is important to people? What is important to people who are actually trying to regulate those markets? Because there's a lot of turf and a lot of human issues associated with even trying to design a regulatory system that reaches out and tries to make some sense of our energy markets. And finally, the balance between energy and environmental policy is critical. I mean, you can, the Congress is in Washington is wonderful closing one eye and just looking at these issues solely as if they were energy issues. And if we were to look at our energy security issues simply through the paradigm of energy security, we would say, heck, we got hundreds of years of coal in the country. Let's just all turn it into liquid fuel and we're energy independent. And, we're good to go. And you would run right off the edge of the cliff, on environmental issues. And, the converse is true. You can sort of say, oh, geez, let's kind of look at this sort of set of environmental issues and only, manage according to those concerns. And you would run off the cliff of energy security in the other direction. And so finding some kind of balance, constructive balance between your energy and your environmental objectives, again, requires a lot of public participation, a lot of design of institutions that tries to bring together different peoples and get them to work together for common objectives. And so, in those four areas, which are sort of central to what we do in energy policy, you just are sort of rife with social issues and wonderful research questions that one hopes we can get people interested in doing. I agree very much with what Dr. Cicerone has said. After I left the Academy, I went to the Department of Energy and was in their what's now the Office of Science for a couple of years. And one of the topics that we struggled with was trying to see if we could possibly sell the proposition of having a social sciences component to what was then the Office of Energy Research, what's now the Office of Science. And we had the same kind of reaction. This is probably kind of like the too hard area. It was too hard to explain it to OMB, too hard to explain it to Congress and to the appropriators. And I think we made a lot of progress. I think that, the President's Council of Advisors on Science and Technology and their latest report that came out about a year and a half ago about, what the energy policy agenda and the energy research agenda really should be going forward really took on and sort of highlighted the critical role that social sciences could play. And I think that was very helpful. And I think that having this new board in place, I think also provides, a higher level of visibility for that and a way of maybe integrating into one place some of those perspectives so that there can be some education that's needed desperately across town as to why these topics are not just good touchy-feely topics, but why they really make a difference to your ability to produce energy, to save energy, to organize and structure markets in ways that work, and to sort of balance these multiple objectives that when you don't balance them, cause whatever policy you're trying to implement to sort of come apart at the seams. So I think that what you're doing is really important. I'm glad you're doing it. The Senator Bingaman, for whom I work, has been a tremendous admirer of the Academy and of the National Research Council. As a former alum of the staff here, I have a great and deep appreciation for the tremendous, spirit of volunteerism that members of the committees bring, the tremendous amount of time that they put into reports. That was always, the kind of person who wants to serve on an Academy or National Research Council committee and give up the consulting opportunities and others, that's a very special kind of person. And the thing I liked most about my job when I was here was just getting to interact with the volunteers. The thing I hated the most was trying to raise money from the federal agencies. That was the pits. But getting together with the members of the committees and working with them, that was dessert. And so I again, thank you so much for what you're doing, and good luck.